Hello, you're listening to Wine Blast. I'm Susie, he's Peter, and we're both masters of wine who happen to be married to each other. Welcome to our weird and wonderful wine-fueled world. And welcome particularly to this episode where we have sunshine, fun, delicious wine, cool people, and good vibrations galore as we explore the Languedoc.
There we go. What an introduction. Sunnies, check. You know, healthy thirst, check. Feather boa, check. Not sure about the last one. Doesn't matter.
Flip-flops.
It's all about the tone here. Yeah, no, the Languedoc. It is a fascinating part of the wine world, isn't it? But you don't just have to take our word for it. You may already be familiar with it yourselves, in which case you'll know. Plus, it's always interesting to hear what other people have to say on the topic too. So the recently published, I think it's fifth edition of the Oxford Companion to Wine, calls the Languedoc France's best value, most fluid wine region. While the World Atlas of Wine says it's changed more than any other French wine region over the last 50 years.
So two books there we cited in our six best wine books episode. And here's another one, because Kermit Lynch, in his Adventures on the Wine Route, writes the following of the Languedoc. There is a wild, savage beauty to the landscape, stark and colourful at once, and the province abounds in medieval fortresses and cathedrals, impossible geological formations, sandy Mediterranean beaches, and unpretentious cuisine.
How's that for painting a picture?
It's good, isn't it?
Yeah, it's all right. And as for whetting the appetite, he also writes, Languedoc is a land of enormous possibility. These are wines that grab you by the nose and force you to pay attention.
So, pay attention we will.
Indeed.
And actually, here are a couple more views on why Languedoc is worthy of our attention.
I mean, where to begin? What isn't exciting about Languedoc? There you go. A taste of the warm south. Very, very good value for money. A lot of choice, a lot of variety.
You know, if you would ask me like 10, 15 years ago that one day you will finish at the south of France making wine, I would never believe it. We can surprise with our new taste of the wine, so from Doc.
So, lots to be getting on with there. That was writer Rupert Miller and wine producer Genia Vermiard of Domaine en Pelouse near Montpellier, both of whom we'll be hearing more from in due course. We'll also be featuring a couple more voices, plus tasting and recommending some fine examples of AOP Languedoc wine, as well as generally throwing our tuppence into the ring, as ever.
Yeah, I think we will, as ever. And actually, we should at this point also thank AOP Languedoc for sponsoring this episode and giving us the opportunity to explore this intriguing and fast-changing region in our own inimitable and, important to add, objective, independent manner. And I think we should kick off with a bit of scene setting, don't you?
We
can get a feel for the place, get into the spirit of things.
Yeah. So we're talking the sunny south of France. That's the simplest way of putting it. I know it's hard in Northern Hemisphere winter to imagine it, but sunny south of France, a gentle sort of arc of vineyards that generally follow the western curve of the French Mediterranean coast. You know, some on flat lands, but many into the mountains and hillsides inland. So well-known towns and cities in this region include the likes of Montpellier, Carcassonne, Narbonne, Nîmes. It's in the far east of the region.
Yeah, I mean, we've loved visiting, haven't we, over the years? Yeah. Also tasting and enjoying the wines on a regular basis.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely fine. Although, you need to remember, I did get bitten by that stray dog once.
You did.
But I think that's a story for another time, don't you? Maybe. It's a glorious part of the world. And I remember on one trip being told, we're not just selling wine, but an entire way of life here. Now, sometimes you hear stuff like that and you think it's just pure PR puffery, but actually there, it just rang true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because this is Mediterranean France. You know, we're talking warm, dry conditions by and large, often quite rugged and beautiful landscapes, slightly wild, a bit like the wines and the food can be, and lots of vines around the place. So much so, and over such a range of sites, that it can be very difficult to generalise about the terroirs and wines. And they make everything from fizz to sweet here. I suppose, though, the full-bodied reds really are the classic stereotype, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, there used to be a lot more vines as well. So Languedoc historically was a favourite territory of the Romans. You know, given the natural conditions, it's an obvious place to grow wine. And over the years, its popularity grew. Then the advent of the Canal du Midi and the National Railway were huge boosts in terms of getting the wines to key markets like Paris, Bordeaux and beyond. And then apparently, Languedoc was the first region to get back on its feet after Phylloxera, due to to widespread grafting in the region. So by the end of the 19th century, the Languedoc as a whole was producing 44% of France's entire wine production.
That's almost half. That really is. Of all of France's production, that is quite something. But I guess this reputation for volume, perhaps the Languedoc being a victim of its own success, has been really hard to shake, even though times have changed. You know, for example, the EU incentivized vine removal to drain the European wine lake. And just two figures to give some context here. You know, the vineyard in the wider Languedoc-Roussillon region in the year 2000 was 242,000 hectares. But by 2018, which is less than 20 years later, the Languedoc vineyard was just 62,000 hectares, so a quarter of what it had been.
Yeah, so they're not directly comparable figures, are they? But, you know, as I think Roussillon is smaller than Languedoc, you know, it gives you the basic idea.
Yeah.
Wow. So, you know, it gone down a huge amount. Yeah. So essentially, you know, the vineyard has been shrinking, you know, a process that hasn't been without its sort of shrinking pains, I suppose you might call it. You know, you've had traditional wine growers up in arms, you've had protests, you've had crisis distillation and all of that. But, you know, I think the bigger picture is that the wines generally from Languedoc have become more interesting with this process.
Yeah, I mean, plus because the vineyard land is relatively affordable, you know, lots of people have been buying in from outside the region. So you get this melting pot of creativity and innovation. I mean, hence this evolution and sense of dynamic change that people often pick up on as a hallmark of the place.
Yeah. Now, there are many official categories of wine made in the broader Languedoc region. There are the Vin de Pays or IGP wines, often made from international grape varieties, I don't know, like Cabernet or Chardonnay and Sauvignon, stuff like that. There's also many well-known appellations you might have heard of, like, you know, Corbière, Limoux, Picpoul de Pinay. I'm saying it in such a French accent, but, you know, Picpoul de Pinay. You know, so we're going to come on to those and others in a bit more detail in another episode soon. In this episode, we are focusing on AOP Languedoc, which is one largish slice of the Languedoc cake, you know, a sort of foundation appellation, if you like.
And it does take quite a bit of explanation, doesn't it? So AOP Languedoc.
So AOP, Appellation d'Origine Protégée.
So this is an appellation that sort of sits between IGP, which is in English Protected Geographical Indication, essentially what Vin de Pays was, and the more tightly delimited local appellations at the top of the tree. So it extends right across the whole Languedoc-Roussillon region, covering roughly 10,000 hectares of vines between Nîmes in the east and the Spanish border to the west. It can be used for white, rosé and red, and essentially it allows producers to blend across regions, but with a lower maximum yield than for IGP. It also stipulates that all wines have to be blends of at least two varieties. And it accounts for about 25% of total Languedoc production across the various AOPs, making it actually the most productive appellation in that sense.
So Andrew Jefford, that brilliant writer, he's, you know,
we're big fans aren't we?
He put it really well in his book, The New France, when he described this appellation as a kind of finishing school for the individual appellations of the future and the source of some of France's best value wines.
So the point before you become your individual
So, you know, while it does exist, AOP Languedoc does exist in its own right as a broad designation, it does also encourage producers to focus on regional wine expressions. And you know, for example, some sub-appellations are allowed to add their name on labels. So AOP Languedoc Grès de Montpellier or AOP Languedoc Montpérou, for example.
Yeah, I mean, it's I think it's perhaps not the easiest appellation to get your head around, but with any luck, that makes some kind of sense. Now, interestingly, as a side note, while Languedoc, the broader region, is dominated by red wine production, rosé is now the dominant category within AOP Languedoc. I mean, it's seen huge growth, particularly on export markets. So maybe that's a sign of the trends for the future.
Yeah. And I think exports are going pretty well for AOP Languedoc, haven't they? You know, up 150% by value from 2005 to 2022, with 17 million bottles exported in 2022, worth €55 million. So, you know, it's doing particularly well in the UK, apparently, also US, China, Europe, beyond big markets. But anyway, These are increasingly popular wines. You know, we're all seeing more of them. So let's delve into how and why this is the case.
Okay, so let's bring in Rupert Miller, a wine writer who's very familiar with the region. And you started by asking him what's exciting about Languedoc right now.
I mean, where to begin? What isn't exciting about Languedoc? There you go. Look, I think Languedoc has, for many years, been a bit of just a big region on the map. Everyone just says, well, yeah, the Languedoc's just that big area where they sort of mostly produce bulk wine kind of thing. And that sort of, and there's a reason for that, obviously. Its history is very much tied up in bulk wine production and all this kind of thing. But I think that really does the region down. I think if you spend a little bit of time getting to know it, obviously, as with so many things, the more you start to get out of it. And there's a lot of really interesting terroir, there's a lot of interesting grape varieties, and obviously there's a lot of younger producers and exciting producers who are starting to change that dynamic. And, you know, there's a lot of wineries that used to just sell to co-ops or used to sell, you know, in bulk, who are now starting to bottle their own wines. And while some of them are in very early stages of that, I think, you know, the potential is definitely there. And also look at the people who are buying in to the Languedoc from other parts of France, from abroad. You know, both branches of the Rothschild family in Bordeaux have estates in Languedoc. So there's a ton of stuff going on, and there's a ton of stuff you can get out of it if you just really give it attention and not just treat it as that sort of that just that chunk of southern France.
And given this, the fact it's so big, and you can experiment and do lots of different things, that's obviously a good thing in one sense, but I suppose it can also be a bad thing in another, in that it's difficult to know what to expect maybe from the wines. I mean, can you generalise about the wines of the Languedoc?
I mean, you're very much looking at southern, you know, Mediterranean reds, you know, Syrah, Grenache, Mourvèdre, that kind of thing. In terms of white wines as well, you've also got a lot of the similar varieties you might find in somewhere like the Rhone, things like Marsan and Roussan. So I think, you know, you're definitely looking at fuller-bodied wines. Obviously, it's a warm region, so sometimes alcohols can be a little bit higher. That said, I think there is a bit of a change going on in approaching how some of these wines are made. I think again, this is very much a generalization, not everyone's doing it, but I think you are seeing some attempts to control alcohol levels, maybe by picking earlier. I think some people are maybe using a lot less oak than they were using before, because if you've got wines which are hitting already 14.5%, you know, and they're quite sort of robust grape varieties, putting them in lots of new oak actually ends up being a little bit too much. And I think there's, you know, that's partly a response of people who are coming in with new ideas. That's established winemakers who are also, you know, young generations who've gone and traveled and been elsewhere and come back, and they're talking to, you know, hip young cavistes in sort of Paris or Montpellier or wherever, Lyon, who are going, look, man, we don't want all these, you know, massively heavy wines with lots of oak. So people are kind of adapting to that sort of style. So I think you're seeing a bit of a transition in the Languedoc at the moment. What would be quite nice as well, and it's sort of starting, is a little introduction of some older varieties, which used to be planted more in the Languedoc, particularly in the reds. We're looking at things like a Picpoul Noir, for example, a little bit different. Or you've got a variety like, well, Aramon, which is the old one, which was doing a lot of the bulk wine production back in the day. But actually, what's interesting about some of these older varieties is that they ripen a bit earlier, they're a little bit lower in alcohol, they're not quite as intense, and sort of they don't get quite as ripe. So these are potentially interesting new grape varieties which can help sort of, again, balance out that and actually give a little bit of distinction to the reds as well, so they're not just Syrah, Grenache, Mourvèdre, wonderful as they are. And obviously these other grape varieties are not, you know, are indigenous, as it were, to the Languedoc. They're, you know, actual French varieties rather than some of them, you know, having been imported from Spain. And then white-wise as well, there's a very similar thing. I mean, obviously Languedoc has its own varieties like Picpoul, hugely popular. Grape varieties like Bourboulenc as well, which is super, and again, a nice point of difference because you don't really find that in many other parts of France. And again, they've got some other white indigenous varieties which are starting to kind of creep back in, I think, as people look to adapt their style, you know, are looking at how they can adapt to climate change, which is another problem in the Languedoc, these warm areas. So I think while in some ways you've got reds and whites, which you can find, which are very, I don't know, very southern French as we sort of imagine them, there are changes going on to make them more to sort of modern tastes and following trends and adapting to climate change. Plus there's a bit of a, I think there's a small but perhaps growing revival in, hey, let's try some of these older varieties out as well.
That's really interesting. Now, you talked about white and red there. What about rosé?
Rosé, well, obviously the rosé boom sparked by their neighbours over in Provence. And I think the more you talk to producers down in the Languedoc, the more they'll tell you how much more rosé they're now making. Another point of climate change, sometimes people are looking around and thinking, these reds are too much, they're too alcoholic, they're too ripe, maybe these areas aren't, you know, so good for the reds we're trying to produce, but obviously if you pick them early, you can make rosé out of them just as well. And I think actually there's, if you're looking for really good rosé, pale rosé, it's exactly the kind of thing you get from over in other parts of France. The Languedoc actually has a huge amount to offer, and they're nowhere near as expensive as some other ones as well.
It's an interesting concept, this value for money one, isn't it? Because on the one hand, Languedoc is known for producing good value wines, but at the same time, people are saying, but hang on, if I need to make better wines in a climate change era, I need to put the prices up because that's much more sustainable. Where do you think the balance is in there? Is Languedoc still good value for money? Is that changing?
Definitely good value for money, over sure. I mean, I think as certain other wines from France go up and up and up in money, then of course Languedoc's always going to look very good in comparison. So no, it's a very, very happy hunting ground if you're a big fan of French wines and sort of the general style of French wine, particularly if it comes from these sort of southern areas, if you like your Grenache and so on, and your Syrah. So definitely worth looking around in Languedoc. I think, you know, you have got certain producers who are pushing the envelope. You know, Gérard Bertrand is always one who's, you know, absolutely out there making kind of cuvées and sort of putting higher prices on them. And that's good. I mean, you know, any region needs people to be sort of pushing it and sort of saying, look, you know, these are good wines. This region is capable of producing good wines and deserve, you know, they deserve to be bought for good money rather than just sort of pittance. Because obviously, you know, while everyone wants everything to be sort of good value and wallet friendly, obviously that has to be at a level where producers are also able to survive.
Why should people buy Languedoc wines, you think? What's the reason to buy them?
A taste of the warm south, very, very good value for money, a lot of choice, a lot of variety. I think the Languedoc is a really great place for people to go looking around in terms of variety, you know, reds, whites, rosés, sparkling wines as well. And a huge amount of history too. I mean, again, it's easy to forget that Languedoc is one of the places where the Romans first arrived in, you know, Gaul, as it was then, and began planting vines. So this place has a huge, huge history of wine production. And while it went a little bit, sort of had a bit of a wobble in the middle with some of its bulk wine past, I think it's rediscovering its roots, really. And it's a very exciting region in France right now.
Rupert, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you, Peter.
A very exciting region indeed. It's so interesting, isn't it, how it's changing?
Yeah. You know, I think the growth of rosé, given climate change, is an interesting notion, isn't it? Given, you know, what we mentioned about the AOP Languedoc category sales, and also, you know, how it's moving forward by rediscovering its past. You know, Rupert mentioned reviving older local grape varieties, and that's something we're very much going to come onto in due course, aren't we?
Indeed. Mm. Coming up, we hear some more fascinating perspectives, and we put the theory to the taste test with a bunch of pretty intriguing wines. To recap so far, the Languedoc has a long wine history. It's an expansive and diverse region in French Mediterranean territory that used to focus on quantity, but now increasingly quality is the aim. Your value for money is one of the region's biggest selling points, but there's so much beyond this, from quirky grape varieties to diverse terroirs, dynamic independent producers, sustainable initiatives, and innovative wines, including the odd rosé.
Tout à fait. Now, I think we should explore a few of these themes in a bit more depth. So first up, I want to bring in wine writer, fellow master of wine, friend, author of many books on the Languedoc, Rosemary George. I asked Rosemary how things had changed in the Languedoc.
Times have definitely changed. So I would say in some way, probably about 1985 was a turning point. The committed producers who, you know, looked at the future of the Languedoc and realised they'd got to do something like reduce quantity, develop quality. And whereas in 1985, the Languedoc had been very much dominated by village cooperatives, who, of course, whose main focus was quantity, you know, that has shifted and the number of cooperatives has shrunk enormously. And the number of independent producers has developed considerably.
So what's the modern reality of Languedoc?
I think some wonderfully drinkable wines. on the whole, good value for money. You know, they haven't sort of hit the stratosphere of Bordeaux, Burgundy, and increasingly the Rhone. Yeah, they're very accessible wines, both white and red. And some, you know, wonderful stories about the producers. There's a lot of individuality. A lot of, you know, outsiders are drawn to the Languedoc. If you, you know, you ask people what they did before, and it's often a, you know, midlife choice, and they've done all sorts of other things. You know, they've been worked in films and journalism and architecture and this and that. You know, that's all quite exciting. They aren't just, you know, it's not just family estates.
And maybe talking a bit more about classical Appalachian wines, you know, grape varieties. Are there any sort of exciting grape varieties you'd pick out that you particularly like or would recommend?
Well, I think, I mean, Carignan is making a comeback. In, you know, in the Carignan, you know, 40 years ago was all gone, you know, sort of lean and raw and tannic and not much fruit, but reduce the yields on old vines and you get something that's really quite exciting, you know, well-made, restrained yields. I think Grenache is also, no, I think that the same way it is in Australia, making a bit of a comeback. And I think Sanso, which is very much a great variety of rosé, actually, if vinified properly, makes some delicious, quite fragrant reds. So, you know, it's almost like the Pinot Noir of the south of France.
Sanso is the Pinot Noir of the south of France. Mm. Now, we did touch on that angle in our Vontu episode as well,
yeah,
didn't we?
Yeah.
How exciting it is there too. Mm. So, one to watch.
Yeah. No, I personally find this aspect of grape varieties quite interesting in the region. You know, we often tend to talk about the place rather than the variety in Languedoc. But I think this is an intriguing part of the picture at the moment. So I asked grower Benoît Bertrand of biodynamic winery Domaine de Malavier in Terrasse du Larzac, what are the grape varieties he's finding most exciting at the moment?
Right now, it's exciting for mine. We have Carignan. It's very interesting. Yeah.
Carignan's an interesting one because It used to be out of favour. Mm-hmm. Everyone, it was high yielding and it made quite boring wines. But it seems to be coming back into favour now, given climate change, with lowering the yields, making more interesting wines, lower alcohols. Is that how you're seeing Carignan partly?
Oh, lower alcohol with the Carignan, it's a bit delicate, difficult. But for example, you have Terre Bourré for the white, which is very interesting because it can produce even in a dryness situation with low alcohol. So I actually use it and I begin to plant it new vines of Terre Bourré. Carignan is interesting also for his dryness resistance.
Terre, talk to me about Terre just very briefly. It's not a variety I know very well.
Yeah.
What does it do? Why is it useful?
Yeah, so Terre, so you can find a Terre Blanc, it's the most known, but you also have grey Terre and a bit of red Terre, but very, very rare. I'm not sure that it's not so much than maybe 10,000 of vines everywhere in the Languedoc, but very interesting because not for the flavour. I like it, but it give some light flavour. It's a very fine, but the very interesting to help on the blending, because when you have some Sauvignon or Viognier, we quickly go to 14 degrees. It helps to put some Terre in the blending to reduce a bit of alcohol, because the main problem of the global warming in the Languedoc is that the more hot there is more concentration and low acidity. So Terre and other species like this could maybe help us.
So Benoît picks up on Rosemary's point about Carignan being interesting right now. Mm. Although you do apparently have to be careful with Carignan, not to yield it too high and protect it from disease in the vineyard, etc., etc. And Terre Bouet is intriguing. Mm. That's a new one on me, but clearly helpful with regard to climate change.
Yeah, we should just probably clarify about climate change, that the main threats of climate change in the Languedoc are to do with, you know, what is already a fairly hot, dry region getting even hotter, particularly in certain spells, heat spikes, and drier as well. There's been lots of droughts, you know, plus extreme weather events, including, you know, even spring frosts.
Yeah, so this can lead to loss of crops or generally higher alcohols, lower acidities in the wines, among other things. And they've actually authorised plantings of other varieties like Assyrtiko and Nira d'Avila in the Languedoc to cope better with drought, heat, etc.
I mean, that's fascinating.
But it is.
Bringing in these things.
I know, from elsewhere. Yeah. I mean, it's still early days. But I think the trend towards the old local varieties, which can have similar beneficial properties, you know, it's probably more interesting.
Yeah, I tend to agree. You know, and this intriguing story is very much taken up by our final guest.
Yeah, and this is Genia from Domaine Ampelousse near Montpellier.
That's right, spot on. So Genia's story is a fabulous one. She's originally from Lithuania and was working as a pharmacist in Scotland when she took a trip to Languedoc in 2014, and it changed her life.
This is all sounding very romantic.
Yeah, no, we should be playing some sort of stirring violin music, shouldn't we? I would ask you to sort of
not
fill
personally
in, but
playing.
No, don't maybe think not. So. Anyway, Genia fell in love with the culture, violins or no violins. She fell in love with the gastronomy, the beautiful landscapes of Languedoc. And she also fell in love with Thibaut Vermillard, who was starting to renovate his grandfather's old vineyard. They got married, she moved to France, and they launched themselves wholeheartedly into their wine project, part of which involved rescuing ancient grape varieties. So you see where I'm going here.
It's all starting to make sense.
Yeah, so I asked Genia how it all started and tell us a bit more about the project.
Yes, you know, if you would ask me like 10, 15 years ago that one day you will finish at the south of France making wine, I would never believe it. So now today it has been almost 10 years since I'm living in France and working with the vines and making wine. We renovated family vineyards. There was no winery. It was really an interesting journey. Now we have a part of the result already of all this work of 10 years.
So that sounds like quite hard work. So, I mean, I can understand you being attracted to the Languedoc climate and landscape and gastronomy, but kind of renovating a family vineyard and winery, you know, what was it about the wine aspect of Languedoc that appealed to you?
Well, when I came to France and Languedoc in particular, I didn't have any wine baggage, wine traditions, and my knowledge was quite low, just like superficial. So it also helped me to have this, freedom and to see the wines in a different way that, for example, Thibaut, I saw them. And for me, especially when in the beginning we started doing research of different historical wine works in the Languedoc, I was amazed, like, what a beautiful diversity Languedoc have. And at the same time, I was a little bit upset. The beautiful diversity has a little bit been lost since 150, 200 years now. So that two feelings that I had at the moment, when we talked with Thibaut, when we started to be interested in the historical grape varieties that we wanted to plant in our Domaine Ampelousse, for me it was just obvious. It's so interesting and it's nice to preserve the wine heritage for the first time, you know, like to give a historical dimension to the terroir that we have here, and also to rediscover a new taste of Languedoc wines.
So let's talk about that then. You're a large part of what you're doing is you're rescuing and reviving ancient Languedoc grape varieties and then making them into wines. Can you just tell me a bit about that, what you're doing and why and how?
Okay, sure. I will start maybe with just a little point with a particularity of our terroir, but because our Domaine Ampelousse, it's at the east of Languedoc, and the particularity of this place is that we have the terroir, it's a rolled pebbles, that were it's interface, because we have cultural and geography of Languedoc. We have a stones that were brought from Alps, so it's a Alpine origin, and they were brought from Rhone. So it's a three forces that has connected in our terroir. It's the same terroir like Châteauneuf-du-Pape appellation, for example. So for us, when we started to looking for grape varieties and choosing what we want to plant, one thing was really important to keep the connection between grape variety and terroir, because they live together, so they need to be well connected and well adapted to each other. That's why also we choose some of the grape varieties that are native from Languedoc and some grape varieties that are from Châteauneuf-du-Pape appellation, like Counoise or Picardon that comes from Châteauneuf-du-Pape. And in Languedoc, we have also beautiful Picpoul Noir, for example, Terre Noire, Riverain. So this is a little research that we do and chosen for the first plantations in 2015 and 16. The two main axes, it was one for historical dimension for, you know, this highlight, this heritage. And the second one, also when we wanted to build a vineyard that would be also resilient in facing the climate change, global warming. So also the second aspect was to choose the grape varieties that would be adapted to this one, so we can still do wine tomorrow. So we do a selection on different grapes, and what we first, it was kind of theoretical and historical research and approach, a little bit exchange with another winemakers. Today we can see it a little bit more practical way, because it's been 5 millesimes vintage that we have been vinifying, so we have a little bit experience on that way. And we can say that today, when you have a bigger diversity of grape varieties with different parameters, so it's more interesting to work in terms of global warming. I was listening to your recent podcast about Ventoux appellation, and they were also speaking about Sanso grape variety that has bigger berries, more juice. I absolutely agree with this approach, because one of the grapes varieties that I cultivate, it's Riverain. It's a parent of Sanso, and it also has a bigger grape, so it has juiciness. It accumulates less alcohol, so we can also have a lighter bodied wine in Languedoc. We can surprise with our new taste of the wines of Languedoc.
If you were going to choose like one white and one red variety, which you've kind of, you know, old grape variety, which you've sort of reviving, which is coping particularly well against, which is particularly well adapted for climate change, and also is really interesting for wines, what would you choose if you had to choose just one white, one red?
Well, for the white grape varieties, one of the grapes that we have planted, it's a Picardon grape variety that comes from the Châteauneuf-du-Pape, and they used to be also largely cultivated in Languedoc, and it almost has disappeared in 2017. There was just less than 1 hectare in France. So it's when we planted, we didn't know exactly the taste, what it's going to do, but it was one little reason we took, just, you know, curious. And actually, every time when I vinificate Picardon, it's really nice structured wine, and it's really a lot of finesse. And you can say that you can compare it to other ones. It has bigger berries, so there is more juiciness. It's quite well adapted to the climate change. But then it's sometimes for one, my choice, it's really personal. It's not, you know, neutral, objective, but it's a choice that we do. And for the red one, I would go to Picpoul Noir grape variety. So, you know, we know much more Picpoul White in Picpoul du Pinet appellation, but this is, it's like a big brother of Picpoul White, because it's an old grape varieties that used to be noir, and with a natural mutation that happens in the nature, it becomes white and the gris and its rosy color. So Picpoul Noir, I choose this variety for one aspect. It can really nicely keep his acidity. It's grape variety that can go to, in terms of maturity, and 13, 14, even 50 degrees if you let it ripe. But at the same time, it will always have a pH, the acidity level really, so pH low and acidity level quite high. And this is nice balance that we can find in the wines with the Picpoul Noir grape variety. So two personal choices, Picardon and Picpoul Noir. This is a really a richness of Languedoc. It's a diversity of the terroir and of the grapes. So that's what they choose.
So that's really interesting, rescuing these ancient varieties from the sounds of it, almost from the point of disappearance.
Yeah, yeah. And one question I did ask was, you know, how easy is it to sell these virtually unknown grape varieties, thinking, you know, it's virtually impossible. And she said, you know, actually people are really open to buying them, not because they're interested in the technical details, but because people pick up really quickly on the story about reviving local history, about saving grapes from oblivion. You know, she said it really touches people, and they're curious to discover a sort of different side to Languedoc. You know, not just big dark red wines, but you know, lighter, elegant reds as well.
So, and it's also an added bonus that these varieties seem well adapted to cope with climate change.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, so we may well be seeing more and more of this kind of thing in the future. Mm. And apparently, Genia was saying the Languedoc appellation rules have changed recently to incorporate this trend too. So producers can now use up to 30% of these historic grape varieties in their blends, alongside, you know, traditional varieties like Grenache, Syrah, Carignan, where before it was zero. They weren't allowed to use them, but now they can. They're allowed to sort of incorporate them. So, and that may grow in the future too. You know, Genia said that would strengthen the identity of Languedoc wines even further if that did happen. So
aren't they doing some interesting things on sustainability too?
Yeah, absolutely. So good point. I pretty much put exactly that question to Genia, and here's what she said.
We see the farming, the winemaking as like actor in our ecosystem, in also economical system and environmental. So since a couple of years, since 2019, we plant new parcels in agroforestry. So we had a good example, for example, in 2019 here in South of France was really heat episode were quite strong, and we observed that the parcels that surrounded by olive trees, we have beautiful 400 years olive trees. So this little ecosystem creates a little bit more freshness in the parcel. So this is also how we plant our new lands. So it's not like one, you know, when you see without ending the vineyards. No, it's more like little plots separated by olive tree that allows to have their own microbiology and symbiosis between microbes and the plants.
So you're planting olive trees in sort of, you have rows of vineyards, then every so often you have a row of olive
every
trees.
12 rows vineyards, one row of olive tree.
You're finding that helps with the microclimate, sort of almost lower the temperatures or increase the humidity or improve the root systems. Is it doing all those things?
Personally, it's more observation work because we had already all trees, and I know that the trees, they breathe also. So there is a little bit more humidity in the atmosphere around the trees, and also interwork between the racine, the roots. Thank you. So these are little factors, multi-factors, I would say, there is no one answer, makes that the microclimates are a little bit more fresh and also more resilient for the diseases or for the heat, even for the frozen, sometimes in the spring. So it's one of the choices that we do. We do organic farming since 2015, but then little by little, we add, you know, possibilities, because today I would say that there is no one perfect good answer how to can you adapt to the global warming, climate change. So there are little multiple choices that you could do in the farming, and then you adapt to what landscape you have, you know, what size also of your estate is. So many different choices.
Genia, thank you so much.
You're very welcome, Peter.
So interplanting olive trees with vines helps them cope with heat and drought from climate change, which is fascinating, isn't it?
Yeah. Agroforestry. There we are. Mm. You know, it does sound like there's something to it. Apparently 15% of AOP Languedoc producers are organic too, which is a high rate
that
in the context.
High, yeah.
So lots going on. You know, what I love about Domaine en Pelouse is they're doing great, you know, really innovative work, but very much rooted in local identity and traditions too. And also, you know, typical of one trend in the Languedoc, of you know, kind of younger generation, fresh talent from outside the region, helping effect sort of positive change, you know, and working for a sustainable future. So lots there.
It's a lovely story. Right, so we've got one or two AOP Languedoc wines to taste and recommend, haven't we, before we finish up. And we're starting with the Château de Lascaux Garrigue Blanc 2021. Now, this is a biodynamic producer based in Pic-Saint-Loup. This white is mainly Vermentino, and it's a classic Southern French white. You've got waxy red apple aromas. It's quite generous. It's spicy. It's got a warming sort of palate with a lovely creamy, leasy texture. Yeah. It's very drinkable. And actually, although I say generous, it's 13% alcohol. So not crazily high alcohol. About £20.
Yeah, it's really nice. Now, we could not recommend a rosé. So I've got the Paul Mas Jardin de Rose Traviata 2022, which is £13.99 from Waitrose. It's quite a sort of fancy flute bottle, isn't it, with a glass top. But, you know, it's the wine itself, it's really characterful, isn't it? It's full of juicy dark fruit and sort of rose hip notes. You know, a bit more oomph than you might expect from Provence, for example, which I think is what Languedoc is about, that bit more character, bit more weight, really sort of satisfying rosé.
Paul Mas,
obviously,
stuff,
a name many people will recommend, one of the bigger producers in the region.
Now, we've also got a series of excellent reds, as you might expect. And first up is the Bergerie du Capucin, Les Cent Pas du Berger Rouge 2020. Whew, long name. Love the French.
Gotta earn it.
Just one whiff of this and you are transported straight to the herb-covered, sun-drenched slopes of Languedoc. Yeah, it's so evocative. Yeah. You know, you've got really wonderful aromas of wild herbs and some wood smoke, a bit of incense, leathery, dark olives. And then this sort of mouthful of juicy, bittersweet dark berry fruit. It's a classic Languedoc red. I would say ideal for a cassolet.
Yeah.
And so much wine for £16 or about that much.
Absolutely. So I've got another red. It's not dissimilar in style, actually. Maybe with even more sort of density and richness. It's the Domaine de Roquemale Les Grès 2020 from Grès de Montpellier, the subzone. You know, your Capucin was mainly Grenache with some Syrah. It's mainly Syrah with some Grenache and Sanso. It's a tiny bit more expensive, but just over £20. But it's, you know, it's absolutely captivating. It's got aromas of sort of candle wax and plum and sandalwood, and then this really complex, intense, bittersweet palate profile. It's so foody, just gorgeous.
Yeah, I love that one.
Gorgeous.
And we've got another red from the same area, but different in style. So this is Domaine en Plus, and it's the Languedoc Grès de Montpellier 2022. Now, this is an equal Syrah Grenache blend, but Genier explained their terroir gives freshness to their wines. And this wine captures that perfectly, doesn't it? You know, it's wonderfully refreshing and lifted. You've got some floral, sort of brambly aromas, and then in your mouth, you've got that elegance and intensity and persistence, you know, really fine tannins, savoury undertones. There's a lot of savouriness in all of these wines. You know, it's serious, but it's so enjoyable. And again, a great food wine.
Yeah, I mean, I have to say, we tried a whole bunch of wines from Opolis, didn't we?
Yeah, we did.
They were genuinely outstanding.
Yeah.
Not just good, but different, refreshing, sort of characterful, elegant wines.
Yeah, it's pale and lifted really refreshing.
With such intensity as well. That's really hard to do.
Yeah. You know?
So this is definitely a Languedoc producer to discover, if you don't know them already. Their wines aren't in the UK yet, but hopefully they will be soon. Now, one final tip from me, that Clos de Nîmes Loret 2020. It's about £22. It's organic. It's another sort of lighter, you know, lifted style that uses a fair bit of Sanso, which we've discussed. I just think it's lovely to see these really sort of poised, lighter styles coming out of Languedoc now. You know, still with that bittersweet intensity so typical of the region, but just with real elegance and lift and grace. So exciting.
And one final wine. We couldn't resist, could we, dipping into our own cellar to find an older vintage.
Yeah,
and we found one at the back somewhere, covered in dust, looking a bit sorry for itself. It probably hasn't been very well looked after, but we picked it out and it's the Domaine Les Aurelles Solène 2000.
2000.
And it's stunning, isn't it?
Oh,
you know, it is really testament to how this rugged, wild character of Languedoc Reds can age and develop. You know, it's from the Pézenas subzone, which is quite well known, and I think it's a blend of Carignan and Grenache. Yeah. But it's just, I mean, it's properly aged.
It's just good. Yeah, what a glassful. You know, I think Kermit Lynch talks about how the best Languedoc wines penetrate right into one's bloodstream. And I think this is a brilliant example of that. You know, it almost tastes quite bloody, doesn't it? You know, sort of
meaty,
feral.
And
absolutely. It's just sort of
leathery
wild.
But
it's also so complex and serious and savoury. You know, I guess it's a real attention grabber, isn't it, of a wine? You know, and that's something we did promise at the outset of this episode, if I'm remembering it rightly.
Indeed we did. So some wonderfully characterful, elegant, refreshingly different wines there from AOP Languedoc. I think one tip we would give when it comes to Languedoc wines is choose your producer with care. You know, it's the one key to quality in such a diverse region. Yeah. You know, obviously the wines we've recommended here are good, in our humble opinion. but this is one region to seek out advice and tips. Yeah. It will definitely sort of fast track your journey to pleasure.
Yeah, and that could be your local wine merchant or whoever. But don't be afraid to ask for advice. It's, you know, the rewards are right there in the glass. One other point to mention is you know, we've mentioned these wines probably work best with food. In fact, Benoit mentioned how good his mum's ratatouille is with Languedoc Red. Oh. Rupert recommended cassoulet with the same. You know, we haven't really had time to go into this, but the good news is we will be circling back to this topic in another episode very soon. So keep your eyes peeled. And your ears peeled. Such a thing can be done for that one.
By way of closing summary, Languedoc is a vibrant, fast evolving wine region, famous in the past for quantity, but now increasingly associated with diversity, value for money, and characterful wines across a host of styles. Climate change is presenting challenges, which producers are responding to, often in innovative and sometimes surprising ways. This, plus the influx of outsider talent and younger generations, often making their own wine rather than supplying co-ops, is making for a dynamic wine scene very much worthy of your attention.
Now, we'll put all the wine details on our show notes and social media as usual. Thanks to our sponsors, AOP Languedoc, and also our interviewees, Rupert Miller, Rosemary George, Benoit Bertrand, and Genia Vermillard. And of course, thanks to you for listening. Until next time, cheers.